Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week I speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. This week I am joined again back on the show, Dr. Fox from CRPN. Dr. Fox, it's been a while, hasn't it, since you and I reconnected or connected one to one? And we were just saying before we hit record here that it was back in October 2022, but we've done a couple of shows, so just pleased to have you back on board, my man.
Nice to be here, James. It's been a hot minute. This will be my third episode on Huxley Morton. Now that you say it, I had you on CRPN a couple times, between here and there. Between the last time I was on here, you were on mine.
Yeah.
And that was about the last time that we got to talk. But so much has changed. It feels like every time I get the opportunity to come on to Huxley Morton, there's so much more that I can share.
Amazing. Well, look, I guess one thing that I have been seeing all over LinkedIn of late, and I think that you guys have broke the internet, was a little conference that you were heavily involved in. So could you, I guess, tell me about that, mate? Or maybe go right back to where it was born, because I know that you're one of the founding members, partners. Just explain to me and the audience, I guess, what this is all about.
Well, there was quite the gestation cycle around that little conference that we call Save Our Sites. It started a while back, where a number of frontline workers, a number of site owners, site representatives started becoming very unhappy with the current site representation and conferencing. A lot of the current conferences, big business, big trade show, make a lot of money, go there for business cards, don't really go there for the content. And it turned into a frustration, like these people are saying things about us, they're saying things for us, they're saying that they represent us. But they're not. They keep saying the same things over and over again. We don't agree with what they have to say. Kind of have to do a little bit of a change. We have to have a different kind of conference so that the people who are voiceless, who are quote represented in the current stream, actually have an opportunity to share their stories. That's kind of the branch of it. So as we went to all these conferences, it was starting to show that we had a significant unmet need. Then the voices started hitting, and of course, now we've got LinkedIn. So you're looking at a conference that is secondary in person and primary online every single day. Different kind of a conference dynamic.
Well, look, I guess as a recap, when you say kind of talking about us, give me a quick refresh, because you're involved in you've got your fingers in a few pots in terms of sites, CRPN, etc. So for those who haven't caught our first two discussions, give me a quick update, or in your own words, overview as to who you are, the businesses that you are now involved in, because there's a few.
Yeah, so, and if you haven't had a chance to look at that one, I think that it was somewhere in October 2022 was the last time we had a chance to just sit down and talk. A lot's changed since then. Number one is only a few months after we had that podcast, I resigned from my full-time job for a lot of reasons. And when I resigned, I was relying solely on the Clinical Research Payment Network. I started my own site right here in my area, with a focus and a dedication on the autistic population. I wanted to make sure that the autistic population had access to autism-friendly research, which you have to have some different nuances there, which also led me to go far into healthcare integration, working with local doctors so that our autistic patients can be a part of trials at their offices. So now we're talking about potential DCT components. CRPN has just exploded. The last time I talked to you, we probably had about 20 sites. We're well over 100 now. The majority of the money that supported my family was a result of CRPN. I think that was probably one of the scariest parts, is literally walking away from my job that was paying the bills and talking to my wife about it and saying, I think this is going to work. I think that we can do this. And even within the very first year, the community wrapped around us. We had opportunities to earn money, and we're just continuing to grow from there.
Amazing, yeah, because it's scary, isn't it? I remember quitting my job with pretty much without a plan, and just thinking, I hope this works.
Yep, it's just having faith. I feel like we can do this. The other thing to think about is when you quit your job and you're focusing on your plans, you keep saying, "Oh, I'm going to do this all by myself. I'm going to be a solopreneur. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Work with my family." But you're still depending on someone. You're still depending on someone to give you the opportunity to do work. It's just you don't have a steady paycheck. You have to depend on an entire community to do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as you say, there's been a lot of changes. I think probably the biggest one that I want to talk about, because I missed out, I was at a family event with my dad at the same time, is the SOS conference. Now, I've not been able to move on LinkedIn for months and months, seeing promo stuff about it. Where did the idea kind of, well, you covered where the idea came from. How did you go about getting that idea moving? Because it's all very good, and like, we hear a lot in the industry about ideas. We should do this, we should do that. But you guys have kind of got together. And I believe it's yourself, Brad Hightower, Dan Sfera, and is it Monica?
So it's the Latinos in Clinical Research team.
Right.
It's Monica, if you hear this, I'm sorry. I never say your name right. Monica Quitivia, Ashley Margo, Judy Galindo, and we can't forget Chris Sauber. He's also a Den. So between the seven of us, we had so much passion, so much experience to try to serve the community that we said we can do this. It started out just thinking that, okay, we have a few LinkedIn followers. We'll have like 20 people in Arizona. We'll just have a chat. And then it started rolling and rolling. And then we got sponsors. And then we just continued the brand development on LinkedIn every single day.
So
And
when was the, I guess the idea born? And talk me, because I'm interested to know the step-by-step process here, because it sounds like it started like it could be, 20, 30, 40 people in a small conference hall. But I've seen the setup and, seen some of the production stuff from Dan's side of things. It looks incredible. I had massive FOMO sitting over here in the UK, I've got to say. So how did you go about kind of booking venues, things like this? What goes into putting
Oh my
together
gosh.
a conference? I mean, it must have been like a hectic, right?
So one thing to know is we were doing what we could, the seven of us, site directors, we had project manager on the team. We were doing what we could as a team, but of course we all had our own full-time gigs. We all had our own full-time jobs. And then October of last year, Brad Hightower invited me to go to another conference. It was a conference. It was kind of like Y Prime's retreat for their company, turned into a network gathering. So that's what they called it, the Innovation Network Gathering. I'm sure you saw that video of Brad stacking the devices on that. So that was in October. That was at that gathering. And keep in mind, we knew that we were a couple months away from a conference. And when Brad and I went there, we saw that and said, "Oh my gosh, this is the quality that we want with SOS." So at that event, we found the organizers of that event. It was an organization called Smith and Jones. It was like a conference organizers, conference artists, so to speak. So then Smith and Jones came in October and completely revolutionized everything that we were doing. So everything that you experienced in February, it was developed in a couple of months, which was, we
That seems
all
quick.
know
Like, I
it was
mean,
insanely quick.
I just think of like the planning often goes into birthday parties. I mean, I'm organizing my son's fifth birthday party at the moment. Actually, Lucy takes care of that. But there's a lot that goes into these things, weddings, and then I saw the size of the conference, and that was done in a couple of months.
Yep, and that's the number one thing that everyone said is, "I can't believe this is your first conference. This is like a third year conference quality." But it's because it was Everything fell together in place. We found the right people in October. They agreed to help us. And so it turned into quite the event. And you're absolutely right. The amount of work that was put forth in those months was just insane across every.
Question, had you guys, I guess it sounds like you've been to the conference with Brad. Had you guys met otherwise other than on LinkedIn? Because I always feel like, I know you've been on the show a few times. I've had Dan on the podcast. I've been on his YouTube channel, etc. So it's kind of like a little community of people that show up on LinkedIn every day. But had you not met them?
Never. I never met Brad until that time in October, and I never met Dan until SOS, which that was the coolest part of SOS. And I think that was a lot of the magic behind it, is we made a lot of efforts to make sure that that was not the first time we understood someone. It might be the first time we met them physically, but again, it was like a little high school reunion. Everyone came together. We already knew each other's stories. And so we got to kind of validate our humanity at SOS and then build on top of a relationship that we already had, which I think that was the magic behind it, going from online to in person. That conference was not the meat and potatoes. That was the icing on the cake.
Amazing. So who went then? Because there's, I guess, a few familiar faces that I see in the circles of, with yourself, Dan, Brad, etc. Robert Goldman. Was everyone at the conference,
Oh
were
my gosh. It was like a LinkedIn reunion. And that was the first time I met so many
Oh,
people.
and George from Molecule to Market, did he go as well?
George was there.
Oh, amazing.
Edie Edens was there. Jess Thompson, Samantha Register, Mitch Hilby, all of these different people. So all of these people who are like the superstars of LinkedIn for clinical research. I mean, it was there. It was like the Oscars.
As I say, I've had massive FOMO watching it all unveil, so that's why it's good to hear kind of what was going
Oh yeah.
on the
When I
ground,
worked,
maybe.
when we went to the very beginning, we walked into the intro, the welcome, and it was standing room only. That was when I think all of the founders looked at that and said, "We did it. We actually accomplished something." And I'm sure you've heard the stories, and I know that there was all kinds of things on LinkedIn, but there were a lot of people that doubted us. There were a lot of people that didn't think we could do it, we could pull it off. They just thought it was a bunch of a riffraff trying to get something together. But then even, when you walked into that standing room only, and then from standing room only in the welcome all the way to the end where there was a toast, where everyone was still in the room, nobody cut out early. Everyone wanted to be there. Every single panel had sitting, like it was filled. Everything just went exactly as a conference. Well, I'm going to say that you always learn things, but it was there. The spirit was there for a true grassroots, content-driven conference.
How many people did you have in attendance? And was it one day, 2 days? How was it structured?
So it turned into, and this was a funny thing. So IQVIA Technologies ended up coming in later and sponsoring a pre-party. So I want to call it like a day and a half, maybe a day and a quarter. So that night, pre-party, I swear everyone at the conference was at the pre-party, because we got to the point where we had to stop pre-registering people. We ran out of material. We didn't bring all the material. We didn't think we'd pre-register everyone. The line wrapped around the block, the area, the venue was at capacity. People were
No
just partying
way.
the whole night long. And then to answer your question, I think that the final count was just under 400, 300, 380 something. And to put it into perspective, it was two site representatives for every one vendor. It's like a Beach Boys song, right? It was great. It was like all of the vendors were very, very happy. They had more conversation there than they had at some of the biggest trade shows. And I mean, for a first time, just under 400, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
So that, I guess, educate me then for, as someone that is not big and hasn't been active in the conference scene, particularly those over in the States, for example, what was going on? What rooms did you have? What panels did you have? Who was talking? How was it set up with, was there booths? Often I, see from other conferences, oh, come meet me at booth 308 and we'll be selling something.
Yeah, so that so many different dynamics behind it. So if you walk into SOS, you'd go up these stairs to the third floor of a university hall, so to speak, like a hall. We had the entire third floor. So you'd walk into the galley and you'd have like your registration desk, and that's normal. You walk in, here's your registration, here's your badge, here's your bag, your swag bag, whatever you might need. But ironically, at SOS, you turn to the left, you'd see this really weird blanket fort with these signs that said no a-holes allowed, and if you're mean, don't come in here, and that kind of stuff. There were books in that blanket for it. It was a very like a calming session. Nobody thought about that at a conference, but it was a big hit. There were people who couldn't handle that kind of excitement the whole time. They needed a calming room. Again, I'm in the autism community. I've advocated for them. That's a big thing. You need to help for the autistic population, but a lot of the people who get overwhelmed at a conference. You walk into the doors and you have a series of tables. That's where you might eat. You'll have your visiting and all the round tables. I can see it like a wedding. And on the right and the left, there were sponsor booths. All of the sponsor booths. There were 16 sponsors this year. Those were the sponsors that believed in us. And it's similar to what you might see at a
Who
trade
did you have? I
show.
won't ask you to list all 16 because I know our memories typically only hold up to about seven items and things at one point. But who were the ones that you could roll a few off the tongue just to give me an
Oh
idea?
gosh, I wish I could get tell all 16, and I'm gonna regret not saying them. But we had the token in like the real time Prio, eClin Pro, clinical CTMS groups. We had Greenfire stepped up. We had IQVIA Technologies, they stepped up. We had the eReg people. We had Florence. We had Beck Health for the like the EMR scrubbers, the data. We had Scout Clinical. They and. The other thing that to really note here, and this was my little contribution, is I made it a point to do a 1 hour webinar with every single one of our sponsors so that the online community would know about the sponsors before they walked in. So that way, for every conversation that they had with our sponsors, as long as they watched the webinars, it wasn't an elevator pitch. It was the next level of a relationship because they already knew about that sponsor.
Well, so you've already done those webinars. Are they active online or on your website? Where can people access those?
It's the saveoursites.com. They're all there. It's
Oh,
all every
really?
single sponsor had their own webinar. So that when people walked in, they already knew about the sponsors. It wasn't a first pitch. It wasn't a first introduction.
Fair
It
play.
was the development of a relationship.
God, that I know the time and effort that goes into coordinating these things, recording, editing, putting it out. So, I mean, that's a job in itself. And to add that to the short timeline that you put the whole conference together, impressive
Yeah, we
stuff.
did about 14 of the 16 in within the month before.
Wow.
So that was
Good
it was a
going.
lot of recordings, but it was worth it. It did exactly what I had hoped it had done, because it helped our sponsors to feel very engaged. Sometimes that for anyone who plans conferences, it's like a balancing act. The sponsors give you money, and you have to make sure that they get their return on investment. They have to demonstrate that it was worth it. And you have to be really careful not to kind of put them over there to the side, especially when you're content driven. So you have to almost create an environment where they feel like they're engaging with the community. They're not just a pocketbook. And that was a huge goal of ours. We had integrated 1v1 scheduling for every sponsor conference-wide. So the conference offered 1v1 scheduling. So sponsors got to fill up their books with all the people who actually want to talk to them. That's a huge balance.
Wow. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. So, aside from kind of the sponsor activity, the general networking, what was going on with the, I don't know whether you call them round tables, panels, but like the speeches that go on at conferences?
So there were two layers. There was a front stage panel. That was the main stage. We worked really hard not to schedule anything like parallel to the main stage in case people wanted to do that. The reason why we did that is every single topic, there were six panels in an 8 hour period, which if you think about it is insane. But every single topic was voted on by the LinkedIn community and the people who registered the year prior. So we did 6 months of exploration. What do you want to talk about? This is how we're going to do it, that we're going to develop and find the best experts in the field to talk about it. We started the conference with a game show of all things. People walked in, that standing room only. The very first thing that happened, they all had an opportunity to write down content on a game show, and we all voted on it and
Give
how
me
we
an
were.
example of that. What do you mean?
Sure. So it was all about staffing and retention, right? So it was, we would go up and we would ask questions. What do you think is a great way to help to retain employees? What do you think is this? What do you think is that? The panelists were divided into two different groups, and they got half of each room to get all of the comments and questions from one half versus the other half. It was their job to digest the comments and to have a very good argument on how you would do these certain things for staffing. And
Interesting.
then it was a voting thing. So we all had these little flag things, yes or no, and there you go. So right out of the gate, it was engaging the audience. Right out of the gate, it wasn't just sitting there listening to someone, that was being a part of the community. And it just went on from there. Every single panel had two leaders from the executive team and then experts that were just, they were chosen because of what they knew in the field, not because of how much money they had, not because they could afford a panel slot or a speaker slot, but because they were literally some of the best people we could think of to talk about things. And every single panel designed their own thing. So, for example, the first one was a game show host. I'm sure you saw the pictures of the people with wigs. They all did like this whole judge and jury
A
thing.
lot of it because I was away and it was like the kids were off. I was like on my phone, like looking at. I was like, "What is going on here?" So I saw the blanket fort. I saw the wigs. I saw people saying, "Oh, shall I be?" Like even before the conference, saying, "Oh, I'm going to be bringing this wig." I was like, "What is not? I've not seen any of these things for any other conference." I was like, "What have they organized here?" And I was just like, "What's going on?" So yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty unique, certainly from what I've seen. And yeah, I mean, I like the idea of actually having people that are clued up on a subject talk about a subject rather than the person who throws the most money at talking about a subject. So one, I guess staffing and retention, I guess that's my bag. I'm talking to clients about that all the time. What was the general consensus from the community that you had at the conference on that?
Yeah, the general, so general consensus was, again, first thing I ever heard, everyone said, I can't believe this was a first time conference. There were people walking out in tears. Wow, it's about time. I finally understand. I come to a conference and I feel like I belong here. I feel like I'm a part of it. A lot of inclusion. The wants and needs board, well, that's a big famous one that Smith and Jones actually brought in. That was huge. It helped people connect. I've had people reaching out to me for weeks now saying, you've inspired me, I'm going to start my own site. Or you've inspired me, I'm going to take my career to the next level. Or you've inspired me, I want to be an advocate. I want to start speaking up. I want to start doing things. We've got CROs now paying attention, saying we want to be part of it next year. We've got a lot of really good steam, frankly, because of what happened.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah, the fact that you're getting the interest and attention of like CROs and others outside of the site network is impressive. So I guess yeah. So to reverse one bit, I perhaps misunderstood me, or maybe my question was useless. I was also interested to find out the general consensus of the vote about the staffing and retention.
Oh,
As I say, I
yeah.
mean, but selfish interest from myself there, isn't it?
Oh,
Somewhat to
gosh,
agree to that.
I mean, really, really good ideas. A lot of it had to do with good education, making sure that you had a good educational program in place, making sure that you had checkoff lists. Lucia Rodriguez, shout out to Lucia. She did an amazing job talking about that. It also had to do with being straightforward, succession planning, just not holding on to staffing, knowing that they're just going to leave a site because, the proving ground to the entire industry. A lot of cool consensus is there.
Cool.
And
Well, look,
then
and it sounds like the general feedback about the conference, as you said, like there was people leaving in tears, and have reached out to yourself since about starting their own site and becoming an advocate. That must feel pretty amazing. Like if we were to like rewind to like October 2022, would you have ever imagined? I'm gonna have to go back and listen to our first podcast to see if you had envisioned that, but would you have imagined that back then?
Nope. There's a. I don't think anyone could have imagined that it was as much of a success as it was.
Wow.
The one thing that you can't control when you do this is how many people will support you. You have to have faith. And that was the one thing. If you were to rewind even back then, I think there was a recording December 2022. Yeah, December 2022 between Brad, Dan, and I. And we kind of hinted at our dissatisfaction in the conference circuit, and maybe we need a new one. And hint, hint. I think that we had already been in the conferences. We were in the early stages of saying, maybe we should try to do this. Maybe we should get a conference in place so that the people can actually have a voice. And if you were to ask me back then, if I had thought that it was possible that we did what we did, no, there was a lot of work behind the show. But it was a big team effort.
Amazing. Well, I as I say, look, it must have felt amazing to get that done. One thing that I am thinking is, was there any surprises, whether it was conference side or people side? Now I've met a couple of clients who have come over from the States to the UK. We've gone out for lunch, dinner, pint of beer, to the pub, etc. And it's kind of been like what you said. It was like you feel like you've known the people for ages already. Was there, any surprises, even if it was just how tall Brad Hightower really is?
And that's the one thing that you cannot assess on Zoom or online is height. That's the one thing I learned is someone's super, super tall, someone's short, whatever it might be. Their height is something that you never really have a chance to assess. So we decided it'd be great to have a conference in Tucson, Arizona, in Florida, right? Great weather. The entire weekend was rain. I may as well have stayed in Illinois. So that was a
No
surprise.
way. So hold on, you're in Arizona and it rained, because I just think that that place is basically like the desert. You can't go wrong.
Well, you remember it was California was just getting that huge, crazy storm,
I
and
saw that, I
Arizona
think,
was
from the
getting it.
JPM conference that people were getting their umbrellas out and things.
So when we planned it, now talked about this in October. Arizona, February, it's going to be beautiful. We want people to get fresh air. Let's make this system where they have a chance to go outside and walk and, makes them go outside and enjoy the venue because that's why we're there. And then it rained. So that was a
Well,
surprise.
I mean,
That
if
was.
then if there was ever a saving grace about missing something that I really wanted to go to, it is that. Because as a Brit, we get far too much rain as it is. And if I'd flown over and there'd been rain in Arizona,
Raining overcast
that would have
the
killed me.
entire time. So, people got wet because it was still, I mean, it was designed. They had to walk outside and go down this hall to all the their breakout rooms. We didn't even talk about breakout rooms yet, but there was an intentional development of traffic flow to go outside so that people would enjoy the weather. And that was a little bit of a surprise. For me, another one of the surprises is the people that follow you on LinkedIn are only a fraction of the actual people who follow you on LinkedIn. There were so many people who, oh my gosh, I've been following you for years and or I've been doing this or I can't wait for SOS. I've been there ever since the beginning. And they don't engage on LinkedIn, so you don't know who they are. So now you're in a situation where they know you, they know your story, they know everything, and you have to play catch up. And that's a challenge.
I can imagine, actually. I mean, because I do get a lot of messages on LinkedIn. I guess because I'm in that recruiter space, people do perhaps tend to reach out to me, even if it's not via comments or on my content. I get the DMs and I get a lot. And it is somewhat strange, but to have that in a real life, face-to-face, person-to-person situation, that must be, yeah, just quite unique. Not sure, yeah, how it would go, because as I
It's
say, it's
okay. I mean, they understand, and it only takes about a minute or two to start catching up and be connected, because there's a reason why they're connected with you anyway. Like they understand you. You have a mutual interest, and so it doesn't take long. But there is that really weird, small, awkward phase.
No, I'm you know what, I'd never actually thought about that, because the people that I have met from LinkedIn, I've communicated with either podcast, DMs, etc., texts. But yeah, those that perhaps haven't, and the first outreach is kind of like what I would typically see in my DMs, being face to face would perhaps maybe be a little bit strange. So yeah, I can imagine that.
Yep, just kind of have to look at the badge and think to yourself, have I seen this name before?
Cool. And look, you mentioned breakout rooms. Again, look, you're talking to a conference novice here. So you've got the main stage. That's where a lot of the main panels and the discussions and the subjects are covered. Then you've got the sponsor booths, where people can go and speak to the sponsors and talk about their products, their services, and then breakout rooms. How do they work?
Sure. So number one is the entire mission of SOS was to give as many people a voice as possible. That's number one. You don't want to look like a lecture. And what happened was, when you have six panels built into an 8-hour period, you don't have time to do Q&A. You don't have time to let people come up and ask many questions. And just didn't feel right to not give people an opportunity to, one, choose content. Because the panel's set, but sometimes, like, let's say you're not interested in one, you want to go to the other. So we wanted them to have a choice, and we wanted to have a follow-up form of something for all the different panels. That way, if people want they really wanted to speak out at the panel, and it was too structured, there wasn't time. I mean, keep in mind, you only had 45 minutes to deliver a panel discussion with five people, not much time for questions. So we put the ability for the people to have a voice or to engage or to do something for every topic in its own small group, in its own small session. So I was responsible for finance and budget. And so we did our panel. We actually did a mock. I had it so that all three people, the specialists on stage, did a mock negotiation right there. Patient's life is on the hand. They had to work something out in like 9 minutes. So like my workshop or my small group, I developed an activity to where everyone would have a chance to experience a site negotiation. So you have sponsors, CROs, sites, their rules, parameters. Everyone got their own cost sheets, and they all had to negotiate with each other and get something figured out in like a 30-minute period. So you actually got to like be in the trenches. I didn't get to attend it. But everyone's talking about Joe Dustin's group, their breakout on AI and the utilization of AI to help sites. Everyone says it was amazing, but since I was doing my workshop, I didn't have a chance to look at it. So if anyone was in there, if they ever want to comment, I'd love to hear more about it.
Is it possible, again, and this is my own kind of interest now, is it possible to access any of these snippets or content via the SOS site, is what I'm thinking.
So, I think that the panels were recorded audio only. I think we have that, and you'll see snippets of that coming out. I think that's a thing. We intentionally made it so that the small groups were in person only. That's, the one thing that we can all have with each other, the people who are at SOS. Those were the memories that, if you're there, that's your incentive. And the other thing I learned is getting things virtual from a physical conference, it costs the same as an entire conference. So it's much more expensive than many people realize. Of course, we are born out of the net. It only makes sense to do online content. We just didn't have the money this year to do.
Fair enough. Although I mean, I've been following Dan Sverre for as long as I can remember. and I've seen a lot of his interviews and discussions. So were those that I've seen with, I think it's Rod Raphael, with Mitchell, were they?
Brad was on there.
Yes, I saw one with Brad, and yeah, learned that Brad kind of got into research because of Dan. And I think when I first kind of made the move from recruiting engineering experts around the developing world into clinical research, I came across Dan as well, and you know, watched hours and hours of his YouTube channel. Those discussions that Dan has filled, were they panels, breakout rooms? What were they, or were they just separate content? Because that man is a content creation machine.
No, we intentionally created a podcast interview venue,
Right.
and that was another step aside. Let's get some podcasts in. And you saw he did one, I think, with Steve Wimmer in the blanket fort itself.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Oh, it was, I mean, that's why I loved seeing it all, because there were so many, I guess, past guests of the Huxley Morton podcast, so many connections that I knew that were there, and it, you know, to watch it all unfold was pretty cool. So I guess the question is now, look, you've done one. When's the next one?
I know the next one is slotted for in about a year. I know that Brad's hosting it, so Yuma, Arizona, Tucson, Arizona was Dan. Brad's taking it to Oklahoma City. So I know that that's where it's going to be. I don't know a
What's the
venue
weather like
yet.
there? Right.
So that's why it's going to be in March and not February. You don't want to risk February in OKC. There's ice, there's all kinds of stuff. So at least try to do March. Might have Tornado Alley, but we'll try to pick a really good weekend. And that's about as far as I know. When we have a venue and a date, that's when everything starts falling together. That's when we can start. We're gonna have to find more sponsors. We gotta let everyone know. We gotta get registration.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I think we're targeting 2.5 days, a 2 day. That's one thing everyone said. Wish it was longer. Want it to be
Yeah.
longer. We probably could have done the same amount of content in 2 days and enjoyed it much more. We don't have to have more content, just have to spread it out a little bit more.
Gotcha.
And that pre-registration party was a big hit, so hopefully that'll be like the night before. And fingers crossed, it's OKC 2025.
Amazing. Well, look, hopefully I'm not double booked for that one, and can head over and actually meet you in person. I'm sure we'll speak several times between now and then. But yeah, it would be great to get involved in some way, shape, or form, whether it's kind of the staffing and recruiting side of things for myself, or whether it's the career and job search coaching from my good partner Lucy, who is really the star of the show on that. But yeah, no, it'd be amazing to get involved and kind of add to what you guys are doing. Is there, I guess, anything else to update me on aside from the conference? Because the conference has been so massive, right? And that's kind of been the theme of our conversation today. But is there any kind of other general updates from CRPN in terms of members, etc., that are worth kind of giving us a quick note of before we close things off here?
So I don't know if you remember CRPN model, but it's kind of like giving sponsors an insurance card, like their patients accessing a network of sites. That's the whole concept. So I've got over 100 sites now, which means I've, insurance world, I have like 100 clinics, so to speak. I have my first couple sponsors who are utilizing the CRPN network to get their trials done rapidly. Got those. We just opened it up to vendors, which it's like, that's weird. But one of the things that we found was every vendor saying, we wish we had a site voice to help us develop our technology. And every site says, we really want to help, but we can't open our doors for free. We'll never get any work done. So I do have sites in the network agreeing to open up their doors to vendors, and therefore vendors can actually access CRPN as members now. That's huge. Today, actually, I don't know when you're going to be releasing this, but in a couple hours, I get 3 minutes to speak to ARPA, which is a government arm for bioclinical innovation. So I get 3 minutes to tell the entire ARPA community about CRPN. It's growing, it's exploding. I've gotten offers to help with Canada. I've traveled to sites to help reclaim all of the money that they haven't gotten. We've literally got case studies now where we have identified six figures at a time for sites. They just didn't know that they could claim the money. And
Wow.
CRPN came in and fixed it. They got them up and running. So overall, a really, really big success. And YouTube channel, I don't know if you saw it, but
I
I have a
did,
YouTube
yeah. I
now.
saw, I think that was, again, I'm not sure when this is going to get aired, but hopefully sooner rather than later. But for me, I saw it yesterday about the YouTube channel. So you would have got a like on LinkedIn from me on that one.
That's well, it's very, very recent. So, 2 days old,
Wow.
but it allowed me to add the RSS feed. So every single CRPN podcast is on there, all of the shorts. And I did that because we were missing a gap in CRPN. You know, the experience, you get to come on an interview. I interview someone else. You never talk to that person, but then I release it. So this is that missing gap. I'm going to have an opportunity so that the people I interview have a chance to come together and talk with each other. That's the follow-up.
Nice. I like it. Well, it sounds like everything is heading in the right direction. I know that you're often a busy man. I see you posting at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning at times and living a similar life to me as a founder, just trying to do their best. You know, sometimes I still feel like I'm absolutely winging it, but I think that's okay, right? You know, you soon realize that probably so is everyone else. So look, Dr. Fox, absolute pleasure having you back on the show once again. And look, next time, I think, look, let's not leave it so long before we
Sounds good to me.
connect.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's things that I didn't get to tell you. I didn't have enough time. But if you ever have a slot, because I know Huxley Morton is very popular, everyone wants to be on it. If you ever have a slot and you need help or you want to have a chat, let me know. I'd be happy to come on. But I miss Adam. Where's Adam? I want to talk to him again.
Yes, I need to reach out to him, see how he is. I know that his father hasn't been the most well, so that's why he's just taken. I mean, he's still working and everything. He's just been, I guess, sidetracked somewhat and focusing on family first, essentially. So, you know, I mean, you know his values, and I'm sure he will be back in a not too distant future. But look, Daniel, for now, I'll wrap up this podcast, but absolute pleasure catching up with you, my man.
Thanks, James. I really appreciate coming.